Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And this is going to be, I think, a significant interview. As a counselor, I have encountered so many situations involving domestic violence, and both for men as well as for women. But it's primarily something, typically, that is done against women as well as children. And we're all aware of a primary case of three women who were just recently kidnapped that went through 10 years of terror. And we won't go necessarily into that because the news media is covering it, but it seems on a daily basis we hear these stories of women, children, and there are those men too that go through a violence, a domestic violence that so often is hidden like a dark, dirty secret. How do you work with that? How do you get past it? How can you, as an individual, if you are going through something like this, do you have any rights? How do you take a stand? How do you, as a singular person, become aware that you have the power to step out of this, to be able to take charge of your life, your mind first, and then everything else around you? I have two ladies that are joining me this morning, Danielle Wozniak and Karen Allen. They put together this book, Surviving Domestic Violence, A Guide to Healing Your Soul and Building Your Future. And it is very nicely done, and it is a book that anyone can work with. I want to welcome both of you, Danielle and Karen, to the show.
Thank you
for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Ladies, we all can have... I said at the beginning, as a counselor, I've experienced all too much of this. I will relate one case with a woman who, it just burned itself in my memory so strongly. Mm-hmm. She'd been sent to the hospital. She'd been battered so badly. She told me this herself. She was sent to the hospital 20 times. 20 times. She had been beaten so badly. And it was on the 20th trip that she looked at herself in the mirror and said, why am I allowing this? And the woman that was sitting in front of me was beautiful, poised, highly educated, and I asked her, I said, how in the world could you have been, had gone through that? 20 times you had to be beaten to a pulp? I said, you got to tell me why. She said, I felt like I deserved it. And that just boggled my mind. That just blew me away. Danielle, let's start with you. I know in the book you tell about some of your own experiences, and you are an associate professor and a BSW program director at the University of Montana School of Social Work. You've been involved in clinical research. You've been involved in social work. And like me, you've seen and heard so many things. You've had personal experiences yourself, didn't you?
Right. And so absolutely I did. So I was married for, about 15 years. And, you know, I was never physically battered, but it was a pretty emotionally abusive relationship. And it was really corrosive and just really eroded my sense of self in order to stay in that relationship. And it was a process to get out of it. And I think that I also want to mention that in terms of the story that you just told about that lovely woman. The moment that she arrived to say to herself in the mirror, I don't deserve this, that is sort of the turning point. But there were a million turning points prior to that. And so what we see is that when women are getting ready to leave an abusive relationship, there are experiences that they have that are sequential and that get them closer and closer to that moment when they can finally say, I need to get out of here. One of the things that came up in my research, which I wasn't expecting at all, is that when I talked with women who had left either an emotionally or a physically abusive relationship, many of them told a story about a police officer who, you know, if a police were called to a domestic disturbance and they came, and often they would arrest the batterer, almost serendipitously, as they were taking the batterer out the door, a police officer would look back and say to a woman, "You deserve better than this." And that was the moment that she said, "Oh, my gosh, yes,
amazing.
I do. He's right." And that was the time where they were able to finally take that step to propel them out.
Wow. Now, Karen,
if I can add to that, too, one of the things that is a positive in this area is that there are now mandatory reporting laws in many states. And so your woman who kept appearing at the hospital, if that were happening now, in most states, the hospital social worker or someone would be obligated to file a complaint and get the ball rolling. And although not every police department reacts with the kind of sensitivity that Danielle is describing, police officers are much better trained and have a much better understanding of this problem than they used to in the past. But there's still
many,
many
with that.
Times
now,
where women...
Karen, I want to give some information about you, because you are in the social work department chair at Arkansas State University. You have spent close to 20 years as a caseworker and director of social work in various environments. And both of you women are very much involved. Karen, was there a personal experience that you had yourself? I know Danielle has had hers. And I think her statement, I mean, I'm working with some people right now that they've been involved in verbally abusive relationships. And this is something of people say, "Oh, just let it roll off your back, you know, just like water off a duck's back." Well, dependent on a person's sensitivity level and their sense of self-worth, often words are extremely debilitating. And I can remember going through that myself years ago, and it takes time to learn how to take your own power back and say, "Excuse me, but, hey, sticks and stones may break my bones, but their words will never hurt me." I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, men and women both, words do hurt. Karen, what is your experience with this?
Well, I like Danielle, was not in a physically abusive relationship. It was an emotionally abusive relationship, but one of the most disorienting things for me was I did not know what a healthy relationship was. And I think that we use the term violating in the book because there are so many ways in which women are violated and minimized and marginalized. The physical violence certainly is very serious, and we're deeply concerned about that. But culturally, there are so many ways in which women are just discounted and depersonalized. In my own situation, you know, it was a situation where it was an unhealthy relationship where there was emotional abuse, but I had it certainly wasn't physically abusive, so I, for many years, didn't know what was going on, what was wrong, why I was happy, unhappy, and I also fell in the cycle of, if only I did more, if only I did this, if only I took care of this, and so that was my story, is not knowing that a healthy relationship is reciprocal and responsive and validating. And I think that's an important part of recovery for women coming out of any kind of a violating relationship.
Now, one,
I agree.
There are so many good points, ladies, that you bring out in your book, and a significant one. And this is very important, because having been around so many cultures during my years as a counselor, every culture has its own paradigm. And you make a statement. And I want to go into the situation about the battering, because this, sadly, I've seen it in the Native American culture. I've seen it in the European cultures. I have seen it in the Middle Eastern cultures. There is no there's no line on this. I mean, people will say, well, it doesn't happen here. It does. It happens. It happens everywhere. And it's only when women are going to take an assertive stand for themselves that this is going to stop, because the batterers have to be, they have to be held accountable. And one of the statements you make about people that do this, whether it's men or women, they feel their actions are justified and they will twist reality. I'm quoting directly from your book, to explain and excuse their violence, the batterers feel entitled. Boy,
right.
Is that ever a true mm-hmm. statement. It's like, I'm God,
right.
You're the dirt.
Right, and that comes from our dear friend Lundy Bancroft, who has done years, a lifetime of research on batterers. And he really describes thinking errors. And so reasoning with people, pleading with them, trying to do counseling that's insight-oriented is really not going to be very effective, because these men, and we really focused on men as betterers, they have some fundamental errors in their thinking where they feel justified, they feel like they acted in the right, and really buy into their own reality about, if you hadn't done these things, and I wouldn't have had to beat you or abuse you or control you. And so, you know, I think that once women can realize and see that these batterers have thinking errors that you as a partner cannot change, then your choices become a little clearer. Then it's really, do you want to stay and put up with it because it's not likely to change, or do you want to set yourself free and begin a new course? And the reason that we wrote this book was that we had encountered through our research women who had left. And one of the things that we were hearing was that just as that decision to leave was the culmination of a sequence or a process, that the healing continued once women left, but that it hadn't really been, sort of post-traumatic growth had not been well explored or well understood. And a lot of, I think, mental health professionals felt like, well, once a woman is out and safe, then she can kind of continue the journey on her own. And we felt that, yes, that's possible, but we can also make it easier and facilitate that by pointing out some of the trajectory for women and offering the good news that you will feel better, you will continue to grow, and you will get your power back.
Absolutely. Now, there are some points that I want to bring out that you bring out in your book, and that is, about one-third of women who leave an abuser will return or enter into another abusive relationship. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. I've seen this so many times. Now, I think of a conversation I had with a mother who was really concerned about a daughter who was in her 40s. We're not talking about a teenager here. We're talking about a woman in her 40s who was in a relationship, and the mother was very concerned, and she said, I just get so anxious because this guy is a stalker, and he was exhibiting behavior that the mother had seen before in people, and she said, this is not good, this is not healthy, this is not a healthy relationship. And I want to bring out some of the points that you two ladies bring in your book. One, the partner that, you know, again, I'll say male, female, because I know a few women that have done this too. They check your cell phone and email without permission. They call you all many, many times during the day. They exhibit extreme jealousy or insecurity, have explosive temper, exert total financial control over everything, isolate you from family or friends, has severe mood swings, physically hurts you or threatens you in any way, is possessive, stalks and spies on you, tells you what to do. These are patterns that usually get to be very, very extreme. And I know that the mother told me just last week how her daughter finally had broken with a boyfriend, and we both did high fives and went, woohoo, great, this is awesome, terrific, mm-hmm. She finally woke up. And the mother now is just hoping that she will understand that she doesn't have to go back into that kind of a situation. And it all had to do mm-hmm. with self-esteem. And the mother talked with me about this. And we all have to go through our own journeys, and we need to know that this is an ongoing process, because once you break through that code, once you break away from what is not healthy for you, it is an ongoing job, and that's one of the gifts that your book brings, and that is the awareness that you continue to work with yourself and work, you know, do things for yourself so that you let the past go. You learn from it, but you don't immerse yourself in it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk, let's address that.
So I'm going to just get back to a point that you made a minute ago, Donna, about one-third of women remaining in abusive relationships or returning. Most successful survivors who end up leaving will return like 2.5 times. So they'll go back or they'll enter into a second relationship. And then, again, for whatever reason, after that second time, they then are able to really make that final break. There's a lot emerging about the neurobiology of trauma. And if you think about it this way, these women are in survival mode. They are absolutely in a state of fear, sometimes paralysis, and they're not thinking clearly all the time. They're not thinking like you and I and others might be doing. Their brain is totally preoccupied with surviving. So when we talk about doing counseling with them and giving them advice and so on, there's sometimes they're not ready to hear it because their neurological circuits are preoccupied with, you know, how am I going to avoid getting hit, what's coming next, and so on and so forth. So I really I really encourage people to understand what it's like to have a switch that is just turned on all the time that you can't turn off, so that you can then move forward and think clearly. Shelter-based treatments do a wonderful job of helping getting women get safe and getting out and getting started on that path. But what we're finding out is that women need to move forward and to reclaim their identity. Their identity, who they are, has been taken away by the abuse. So they need to take steps, we think, in the company of other women, to rediscover who they were, to reestablish where they were going before they entered this abusive relationship. And so that's what the book is really about, is that second stage of really, really healing on, finding hope again after, you know, however many years you've been living with no hope at all. So the neurobiology is a big piece of it, too, that needs to be, you know, help understood so that women can move forward.
I like your words, victim to survivor to thriver. I really like those three words, victim to survivor to thriver. I think that that is something that every human being should know is available to them. And dependent on, again, culture, dependent on education, dependent on personal experience. Sometimes we have to travel a long journey. I know a woman in her 80s that still she's in such stress. She wants to thrive. She's learning how to survive right now. But she's in her 80s, bless her soul. And she's not given up hope. But she's been in a long journey of disorder and discontent for a long, long time. You're right. It's very hard to change those grooves of thinking. You get into such a habit patterning. It's a broken record almost.
You are exactly correct. And when Karen and I talked about how we were going to approach it and what we were going to write about, we actually thought about grooves. And when I explained this to my students, I asked them to envision groove. Of course, they don't know anything about records, but but we do. our thoughts are along those grooves, and so one of the things that we keep saying in this book is that you really have to learn to think differently. Think about who you are, think about what you deserve, and then think about how you can get it. And that's really about those shifts, helping women move from being a victim and to then being a survivor and then to really flourishing in, and also not defining themselves in terms of their experiences with trauma, but to say, yes, trauma certainly was in my life and it conditioned and shaped who I am, but it doesn't define who I am. And that, too, then is a part of shifting our thinking.
I really like the section that you have on the cultural attitudes, especially I would relate to the European and the culture in the United States, that women are trained to use passive words and sentence structures. And I know this is something I had to learn. One, I had to learn how to accept compliments because I had been taught that was not, I was not deserving of that. I remember that as a kid.
Exactly.
Oh, so-and-so is always better than you. I remember being told this over and over again. We talk about the grooves in the head. And the other thing that took me a lot of years to get together on my own is you don't make excuses. You can ask for what you want. You don't have to say, well, it's because this, that, or the other. And I find myself still going into that trap because that was something I learned so many years ago. And it's amazing how you have to be mindful about this thing. You don't have to make excuses. It's okay to ask for what you want. It's okay to say, this is what is happening. Boom, that's it. Guys do it all the time. Women are taught to do otherwise, and they're taught by other women.
Yep, absolutely. Karen, I don't know if you see it in your students, but I see it in my female students a lot, especially if they're asking for an extension on a paper or if they're asking for something. And we certainly encountered that quite a great deal in the groups that we ran. And so it really, we just said, hold on a second. These women have been so educated in how to put themselves last, how to think of themselves as unworthy and undeserving, and to have to try and make excuses all the time for things that they need as though they don't really deserve it, that we really wanted to offer some down and dirty training that would do the opposite, would untrain that kind of thinking. And boy, I tell you, once you learn it, it's incredibly empowering. And we found that it translates into a number of then different relationships. Karen, what's your thinking?
Well, I was going to tell just a funny little metaphor in myself. I don't think this applies to just women who are in abusive relationships. I think this is a widespread cultural thing, and it does have to do with the language of our culture and the media and the way in which, you know, women are expected to be receptive to men. We're not expected to be initiators. If a woman is assertive at work, she's identified as aggressive, whereas another man, if it were a man, he'd be identified as assertive. But I catch it in myself even after exploring this material. I love ice cream. So I'll say to my husband, would you like to go get an ice cream? Instead of saying, I want to go get an ice cream. Would you like to come with me? It's just really, really ingrained in us. And healthy women, too.
I agree.
Yep.
And I think that one of the gifts that your book brings, which I think is so important, women in general do not want to be seen as obnoxious. They don't want to be seen as rude, although there are those that are that way, and they don't care. They just steamroll over others. And I'm not talking about someone just being aggressive. I'm talking about those that are rude. But women in general do not like conflict at all. And they will go 10,000 miles, in my experience, to avoid it. They're always passively saying, well, let's do this, let's do that, let's do the other. But there's a strange thing that happens when you learn one little word, and that's N-O, no. When you learn that word, it's just like a two-year-old that stands in front of you and says, no, 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 no. I watched a baby just this weekend, and I laughed like crazy because I said, this kid is so smart. This kid understands how to get what they want, and they're very clear about it. Even though they can't formulate words, they've got the communication skill. And I thought, what is it with we women, unless we're taught by another woman, or we're made aware, we happen to come across a book like yours, Surviving Domestic Violence, and you go, wow, because your book is about so much more. You have exercises in here to empower the person, to help them make a shift in their thinking. You have writing exercises, which the hand-brain connection. If you want to change a groove, you need to write. Mm-hmm. It really makes an incredible difference. And you have some wonderful exercises in your book. And I really liked this. And then I liked something also in your book. And you're saying, as you grow, as you become aware of yourself, as you disengage yourself from the behaviors and the habits that have been so detrimental to oneself, pay it forward, pass the knowledge along, like we're doing right now at this moment, to others that need to know, one, they have value, two, they can do something about their lives, and three, that life has a beauty to it and a joy that is the right of the human being to experience. Paying it forward. I really like that.
Thank you. I think that part of that is, you know, paying it forward is part of just affirming this new way of thinking. And I was hoping you would ask, like, what is our favorite activity? And I think my favorite activity in the book is the birthright experience, where we mm-hmm. ask women to claim their birthright and to really challenge their internal thinking that they were born for suffering or to clean up everyone's messes or to put themselves last. We really want them to embrace the idea that they were born to be loved and cherished and to be cared for and to be admired and to be creative. And once we get women thinking about those things and claiming that as theirs, we just really saw women blossom. And then, so what do you do with that wonderful positive energy? Absolutely, you pay that forward to other women. And one of the activities that we have women doing is to pay compliments. First of all, it asks us to see the positive all the time in other people rather than seeing the negative. And then part of that also then with that activity is to also to help other women recognize that positive by pointing it out.
Mm-hmm. My favorite exercise with the group that I thought was the most interesting to me, there's an exercise in there that seems really simple. It's just called My Favorite, where you list your favorite animal, your favorite color, your favorite movie. And that exercise was very revealing because that was very hard for the women. They might be able to answer one or two of them, but they were so lost in the relationship that even answering simple questions about what is my anything, they had lost their identity to the point where those questions were challenging. And that was a real eye opener for me about the need to reclaim their identity and get back to who they were at the core of themselves. So that was the most interesting exercise for me.
Karen, I loved that one. I remember when I was one of those transformative moments for me personally was I was sitting in a restaurant with my former husband, and I looked at him and said, "Well, what do I feel like eating tonight?" And I thought, holy cannoli, I have no idea what I feel like doing about anything. And that was when I heard myself say those words. I thought, I don't even know what I like anymore. It's always, you know, decided by him. And so the way that activity came about was, like everything we did, trial and error. But I also thought about my own journey to try and reclaim myself and how I had to start with really basic things like what did I want to eat tonight, because I was so used to cooking what he wanted to eat. How did I want to spend my time, because my life before revolved 100% around him and his needs. So that reclamation, I think it was Karen who said, that's a reclamation process. And we kind of set to work on that.
Well, ladies, this has been delightful. Your book, Surviving Domestic Violence, A Guide to Healing Your Soul and Building Your Future. And I know that your primary focus was women, but I know that abuse occurs with men as well. And I think even if a man picked this book up, knowing that the orientation was towards women specifically, if there's anyone that you know, for those of you who are listening, anyone, I don't care whether they're male or female, an insight into an awareness that this is not natural, that your life can be rich and full, and you can be a whole person. You don't have to go through physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, verbal abuse. This is not your natural heritage. These two ladies, Danielle Wozniak and Karen Allen, who deal with this almost every day, they've brought this gift of surviving domestic violence and more to you in this fabulous book. Well, ladies, what's your website that people can go to?
It's www.survivingdomesticviolence.org.
Survivingdomesticviolence.org. If you need help, you know of someone who does. Gift yourself or that other person with this book because it can change their life. Ladies, thank you so much for being with me, Danielle Wozniak and Karen Allen. It's been a joy having you as a guest. Continue
thank
to
you so much
you
for
both
having
of you. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want to thank Scott Colburn at KZUM in Nebraska. We had a wonderful show that we did on Saturday, and if any of you are listening, then that have been a Scott Colburn fan. He's celebrating 28 years of live broadcasting on KZUM in Nebraska. And I have known him for a good number of years and have done shows. And it's just he's just one of the most gracious people you could ever be with. So I want to thank him very much again for that opportunity. Okay, again, phone number to call into. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then all you need to do is relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that crosses your mind. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story with you about a unique natural condition. And this is a phenomena that is fairly rare, and it has occurred, well, again, it's a rare condition. This situation occurred in 1905, and it was at a hotel, Parkfield, at Kittery Point in Maine. The date, September 1st, 1905, and what happened? Well, what would you think if the beach, if you were at a beach, and that beach literally exploded into flames? Well, if you were in California, you might think it had something to do with the oil drilling that was going on the coastline. I remember that as a child, and it's still going on. However, this situation was extremely unique. It was between 7 and 8 o'clock in the evening. Foot-high flames broke out on the sand and on the water offshore. They could hear the crackling over 300 feet away during the whole time that the beach was burning, and it burned for approximately 45 minutes. People were very frightened. Who wouldn't be? That's just not something that you would expect to happen. There was a smell of sulfurous acid. It permeated all the buildings, especially this very large hotel that was situated on the beach. And people actually got sick. Sulfur just really makes you nauseous, the smell of it. One hotel guest went out and tried to pick up some of the sand, but it was so hot it burned their hand. They dropped it. And an unknown individual did manage to take some of the sand and bring it inside of the hotel building. And what they observed when they put the sand in water is that gas bubbles were escaping from the sandy particles, and they were rising to the surface of the liquid, and they burst into flame as soon as they came in contact with air. Now, in October, the following month, October, it happened again. Now, it was very, very small compared to the first combustion experience. And there was a botany professor, David Ben Hallow, who examined the area and suggested that a layer of buried seaweed had fermented, creating flammable gases, which then erupted into fire. But this didn't compute with people. They said if this was happening all the time, you'd have more combustible situations. But that wasn't the case. I don't believe it's occurred since that one situation in 1905. And on one of my shows, one of my guests was talking about pollution. And of course, Mother Nature can create some very unique environments, creating a pollution that can be very toxic. There's many areas in the country, for example, you must have your water tested, because with rain and just the natural elements of weather change, it causes an erosion of certain rocks that create an arsenic in the water. And I learned that up in the state of Alaska, and I did not know this until one of my clients, who's very much involved in the health field, told me about it just this last trip that I made, that you should, if you use well water, you must be sure that you test it. Don't take anybody's word for it that it's been tested. You must be sure you test the water, because there's high levels of arsenic in some of the water tables. Well, this is occurring naturally. It's not because of any factory or anything else. It is because this is a natural happening. And it's the same thing with combustible substances that can be underground, things that can evolve that we have no knowledge of. Why it happens, when it happens, well, there's just all kinds of unique circumstances. But chemistry, well, that's the name of the game. If you understand the chemistry, many times you can figure out how to work with a solution. But we've got a lot of things that as human beings, we have just not investigated enough. And we are finding that pollution can contribute to flammable water. And I think it was one of my guests about a month or so ago that just recently had said, just recently, there was a river in Europe that it would catch fire because of the chemicals that were in it. Combustible materials that did not necessarily break down molecularly in the water as one expected. So lots of interesting things that go on in life. Do we ever know it all? Heck no, we don't. But that's part of the process of living this experience called life. There's always something new to learn in a unique way. I wanted to share with you some of the information on my guests that are coming up this week. Tomorrow we're talking with Joseph Gallenberger. Yes, if you like Las Vegas, if you enjoy doing blackjack, the slots, whatever, you know, the slot machines, whatever it is that you have fun with, if you love a getaway like that, I think you're going to find Joseph a fascinating man, because this is a man who's worked on developing PK. Now, what's that? That is the skill of being able to move things with the power of the mind. So we're going to be talking with Joseph tomorrow. And then Susan Martinez. This woman has done some fascinating research on a culture of little people. Her book is called The Lost History of Little People. Wow, is it loaded with all kinds of details about little people. Some of them might be considered dwarfs, but they were perfectly proportioned. They did just amazing history, and we're finding out more about these little people all the time. Making Your Creative Mark, Eric Mizell is going to be my guest. This is something about the discovery of the inner you, the child, the imaginative self that loves to play. Well, you're going to be able to find out more about how to do it. And then on Friday, Maggie Shannon is going to be my guest, and she is just an absolute delight. If crafting is something you love to do, no matter what the material may be, by golly, she's going to show you how you can make crafting into something that serves you, not just with joy, but also with insight. So we're going to be talking with all of these wonderful people this week. And if you want to know more information about the guests coming up on the Donna Sabo Show, just check the show information button. That's all you have to do. Well, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, I am delighted to share with you my intuitive insights about you, maybe something else that you might be interested in. And of course, then you're welcome to ask a question. Snackers of the world, did you know that as a snacker, you have a personality type? Mm-hmm. These surveys, I sometimes think people just are bored. They just don't know what else to do with their time. But I had to chuckle over this particular survey. It comes from the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. Ah, yes. That sounds very formal, right? Well, if you like to munch and crunch, apparently there's a personality style that goes along with it. If you like salty foods, how many of us don't like salty food? Well, that means you're a smart explorer. Surprise you? Mm-hmm. Alan Hirsch of the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation said, salt speeds up the neurotransmitters in your brain, which literally helps you to think faster. You're adventurous. You really like to try new things. So that's why the term salty explorer developed. Now, by the way, I just want to add something here. I have known more people just in the past couple of years ending up going to the hospital and being examined. And they're dizzy, they pass out, then they don't know, understand what it is. They come up, they're normal, they say, oh, everything's fine. Then they do a test and they find the salt levels in a person because they have been drinking copious amounts of water. They have literally washed the salt out of their system. And salt is a very, very important part of the diet. Why do you think they put salt licks out for animals? Why do you think animals seek it? Well, we're part of the animal kingdom. And we need to remember salt is important. I guarantee you, the rare person is one that could sit down and eat just a whole container of salt. It just doesn't happen. You can't stand it. How many of you have had foods where it's just so salty that, oh, please, couldn't eat that if I wanted to? Well, if you're in warm environments, we're coming into the warmer months, you need to remember to add salt. And yes, there's salt naturally in food, but there's a reason why when we add salt, food tastes better, and it goes into the stabilization of the body. I used to work for Frito-Lay in California, and all of the people on staff in the plant had to take salt tablets because the salt was literally swept out of their bodies, and they encourage you to drink water, but also to always have salt. So that's something you need to remember. Spicy snacks, yum. Hot salsa, that really something you enjoy with your chips or buffalo wings, whatever it might be. Well, these are people that like variety in life. Stimulation, they're very complex people, and they have various interests, a restless nature, and you really want to have life bring you things that are more interesting. You just don't want to have a boring, mundane oatmeal and plain milk life. That's not what you want. You want more, and so moving forward in life is very important to you. Sweet snacks, breath of fresh air. That's right. You really enjoy being lighthearted. You're creative. And you like something that's going to taste good that makes people smile. Creamy? You're sensitive and serene. Good excuse for ice cream, right? Well, that is because you don't like being a drama queen or king. You like to be serene regardless of what's going on. And you're a very thoughtful and caring person and sour. Woo-hoo! Would you expect that that represents a loyal peacemaker? That's right. You're good at pulling people together, and you'll work with just about anyone. Combine all of those, I'd say you're a pretty dynamic person. What if you liked it all? Go for it. Donna Siebel here. We're taking a break for just a moment. We'll be right back.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Siebel Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Siebel Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Siebel Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Again, send your story to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I want to share a recipe with you this morning. It's balsamic chicken with peppers. And, of course, right now, so many delicious vegetables are coming out, and it's just a joy to use fresh vegetables with your food. Oh, by the way, if you want to give me a call, 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. And using the fresh vegetables, not only does it add color, but it is just, it's so flavorful. The natural juices that come from the vegetables along with the meat is just great. So this is a real simple recipe, and all you're going to need for it is a 4 boneless, skinless chicken breast halves. It'll come to about 1.5 pounds, but 4 of them. A little bit of salt and pepper. You're going to need 4 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 red pepper, 1 yellow pepper, 1 large onion. You want to slice those and slice them thinly. You're going to need 3 cloves of garlic. You want to mince that pretty finely. 3 tablespoons of balsamic vinegar, 4 tablespoons of fresh basil minced, and 3 teaspoons of fresh thyme leaves minced. Now, of course, if you don't have the fresh, you can always use the dried. You just might have to have a little bit more for that additional flavor. So that's what you need. 4 boneless, skinless chicken breast halves, salt and pepper, 4 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 red pepper, 1 yellow pepper, 1 large onion, slice them thinly, 3 cloves of garlic minced, 3 tablespoons of balsamic vinegar, 4 tablespoons of fresh basil minced, 3 teaspoons of fresh thyme leaves minced. This is how easy this is. You season your chicken with salt and pepper, and you put 2 tablespoons of your oil in a nonstick skillet, and you get medium-high heat. Put your chicken in, let it get golden brown, and turn it over. It's going to take about 3 or 4 minutes on each side, golden brown. Now, you want to transfer your chicken, once it's gotten golden brown, to a platter, and you want to cover it so it'll stay warm. And then you want to put the rest of the oil, the other 2 tablespoons of oil, into the same skillet, add your peppers and onion, and sauté until softened, and it's going to take about 6 minutes. Add your garlic, sauté it in the vegetables for about a minute, and this wonderful fragrance will just come up out of the pan. It's awesome. And then you're going to add your balsamic vinegar, your basil, your thyme, and you scrape up all the brown bits on the bottom of your pan. Put your chicken and any juices from the plate in the pan. You want to put your peppers, your onion mixture over the chicken, and you reduce it to a lower heat, to about medium, maybe a little bit less, and you simmer until the chicken is cooked through. It's going to take about 2 to 3 minutes, maybe 5 minutes at the most if you really want to make sure it's cooked. And then you season it with salt and pepper if you want. You've got 4 servings there. It's so easy. And I'll share a tip with you that I learned through Weight Watchers many years ago. And I just take chicken, and it can be a whole chicken cut up into pieces, or you can just have chicken breasts, chicken thighs, whatever you prefer. But I will leave the skin on, and I put it in the skillet, and then I add 2 or 3 onions to it. Put the lid on and just let it simmer slowly. I'm telling you, those juices of the onion and the chicken, they blend on the low heat. The chicken gets golden brown. and the onions get very soft. Oh, the flavor is incredible, and you can add whatever seasonings you want to the latter one that I just mentioned. Easy, flavorful, and if you don't want to keep the skin, fine, but it's something you can even fix ahead. And then save it for a meal. If you're single and you want to have something that you can have fixed in different ways, the cold chicken sliced up, put over a salad is delicious, whatever you want to do. Lots of good, good things to share. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-627-6008. Well, I do know we've got a little bit of time remaining here, and what I wanted to do was to share a couple of points of information. You know, there are things when we look at the past that, oh my goodness, during their era was absolutely scandalous. And lots of times when we sit and we watch programs on history and what people thought were just abominations, we just sit and laugh. We just think it's hilarious. Well, can you imagine Mary, Queen of Scots, yes, that famous historical figure, when she got married in 1558, she wore a white wedding dress. Why was it absolutely scandalous? Her whole outfit was in white. Well, at the time, in the 1500s, white was considered the color of mourning. And are you aware that in the Japanese culture, that is the norm as well, even in today's world? White is considered the color for mourning. Fascinating stuff. It's amazing how we change our minds. Today, the brides of the world, well, they really wear any color they want to wear. But creamy ivory and white still, with lots of lace, and maybe some pearls and rhinestones, whatever we'd like to add to it, still is the favorite of many. I wonder if it started with that world-renowned woman, Mary, Queen of Scots. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm so delighted you've been able to share this hour with me, and I invite you to join me again. We're going to talk tomorrow about, well, if you're into and want to explore PK, shifting things with your mind, I think you're going to find tomorrow's show an interesting one. Also, remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. No matter what your life may be at the moment or what it has been, you always have the power of change. You're the one that is going to be able to make the choices to make your life richer and more encompassing of the hope and the beauty of the world as it should be, as it can be for you. If you're in despairing circumstances at this time, no, you can change them. It is very important for you to recognize your own power of your own individuality. Again, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted that you've been able to spend time with me today. Have a magnificent life, and we'll be chatting again soon. I hope you'll join me, and you'll tell your friends as well, right here, bbsradio.com. Thanks so much. Have a magnificent day. Chat with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.